This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Was a moment because I had my mask on, and of course one should have one's mask on, except when you're trying to do a broadcast. You are, of course, listening to Ron Esplin, and hi everybody, you are listening to the Arty Farty show, the Arty Farty Show from Otago Access Radio 105.4 FM, and welcome everybody. As usual, we have a very busy schedule, and I've got Andy right here beside me.
Good morning.
Hi, Andy.
Nice to be back again.
Oh, we missed you.
I missed it as well.
Yes, I did.
I do miss these. I do look forward to these.
They are fun.
These tete-a-tetes we have.
Indeed, indeed. It's the Tete-a-Tete Gallery, isn't it? The Tate,
yes.
In London. I wonder how they spell that T-A. I wonder who Tate was.
We'll research that and we'll bring that to you on the next
show. Another show.
Well, he must
right.
have been it must have been an arty person. Do we know any artists called Tate?
Well, no, I don't. I can't at this precise moment.
There's a fine Dunedin artist a few years ago, Graham Tate.
He was wonderful.
He was a wonderful.
He was,
painter.
In fact, I have a couple of his paintings.
Oh, do you?
Yes, but I'm sad to say he's passed away. I was doing a class at Waikare Art Group. They're a wonderful art group. They've been around for a long, long, long time.
They've been there since the 50s, I think.
Indeed. And Graham's wife attends that class. So I've promised her that I'll give her a couple of photographs of the two paintings that I've got of his. And I'd better make sure I keep to that promise. It's easy not to keep promises, like getting here on time, for instance. I didn't get here
Ron
in time.
Ron was late today. He didn't even have a note from his mother.
I've got a few notes. So, of course, loyal as ever, Andy was here. So I'm very grateful to you, Andy.
Easy.
Now, look, what's happening at the Art Zone in Hanover Street?
Well, it's a bit quiet at the moment. The roadworks, as everyone knows, has turned the whole place upside down, so it is a little bit difficult to get hold of, and it's a bit difficult getting stuff in. So yeah, we're a little bit on the ropes at the moment.
Oh, right.
But it'll come right as soon as the roads clear up, as soon as people can get to town, then we should be all right. So it is a little bit quiet, but you know, it's grotty weather, it's inside painting weather. So if you do want something, come down and we'll make you an offer you can't refuse. We've got some new products coming in, and I can't actually remember because Rosie's ordered them. And it's difficult. She orders things and you never hear any more about it. And then when you've forgotten you've ordered them, the company rings up and says, that stuff that you wanted turned up. Because, you know, you've got to get things, you've got to get it made from overseas.
Yeah.
You've got to get it brought here. You've got to get drivers to drive it down. It's a funny old time. It's like the buses. You know, the buses are not working that well because they can't get drivers because they're all crook.
That's right.
So, yes, it is a funny old time, but we'll get through it. We've had weird things before, but everything that we normally stock is absolutely stocked up to the gunwale. So we're not.
That's great.
I mean, even when you go to the supermarkets now, unusually you see shelves still empty. You know, 2 or 3 or 10 years ago, you never saw an empty shelf. If something was sold, it was replaced.
Mm.
Everything's always absolutely full up. But, you know, if the supermarkets can't get their basics, then we're lucky to get anything.
Yes.
But we're pretty good, actually, with our normal range that we stock, we're good. We're stocked up. And there's more coming in a little bit later on in the week. So, yes, you will not be disappointed.
Well, I never have been disappointed when I called on Art Zone, and I doubt very much if anyone else has been, to be perfectly honest. Have you... stretching, you're still doing canvas stretching?
Yes.
It reminds me a bit of the... what did they do? The sheep, they used to pull the fleeces off. They had a machine.
Ooh.
Which was designed to...
Sounds a bit barbaric, really, doesn't it?
It certainly sounds like it, doesn't it? Yeah. And what was it called? I can't remember. It had a funny name.
It wasn't the thresher. Was it a thresher?
Well, I think that was a word that would have... put fear into any sheep's heart. You are going into the thresher.
The thresher, sounds nice. Sounds quite nice.
When we were at the university the first year, you were called a fresher.
Yeah.
Just to make use of that alliteration.
But we do, you mentioned the stretching thing, we do that because it's easy to get the bars and it's easy to get the canvas, but it's not so easy to get them pre-done, because if you want something... over a meter square, it's a big drama to get the thing down because it takes up a lot of space. But I get all the stuff in and just make them up myself. So if people want their own canvases stretched, I can do it. Or we just do them off the peg. And especially if someone wants an unusual size, they say you couldn't possibly. I did one the other week. It was a meter and a half by 600, so it was like a letterbox.
Oh my goodness!
And you'd never stock one of those because it's very unusual. But yes. Give me 2 or 3 hours, and I can just
make amazing.
It.
So, that's really something.
So
knowing.
And it's handy for people because they don't have to. They don't have to conform and say, well, I'd like to do a crazy size or shape, but I just have to stick to the old 600 by 800 because that's all you can get. You get anything you want.
Quite rightly so, too. Now, what about those circles? People do circles, for goodness sake. And there's one artist, a New Zealand artist, who does a lot of that. And she must have a framer. Produces those circular frames for some reason.
I've never stretched a circle. I tried it once, and of course, it all buckled and puckered. I think when they do that, it's manufactured, so they heat the canvas and stretch it. It's like a bongo drum.
But I
can't do it. A lot of people do it on wood. And have you heard of people painting on aluminium?
Well, I have actually. Yes, and in fact. Ralph Hotry painted on aluminium.
Oh, really? It's a new thing for me. I haven't heard of it. And I said to the lady that was doing it, why aluminium? And she said, well, it can't break. It won't rust. It won't rot. It's actually the toughest, most long-surviving material that you can paint on. And when you think of a canvas, if you've got a canvas wet or it was hanging in a damp place, it will rot. It's fabric. It's just like your T-shirt. It will...
Right.
So, but there's... I mean, even if you dropped your painting on the floor, aluminium is not going to break.
Well, that's probably pretty rough if it's a painting that you bought a while back and you don't like it anymore. And you're stuck with it, aren't you?
So you want to chuck it out. You make a bowl out of it or something, panel beater, because it's very easily worked. But I just thought that was a very good idea. Having never... thought of painting on aluminium, you couldn't get anything that would last longer.
Right, yes, that's right.
So
you've sort of written your artwork into history.
Yeah.
Although the stuff might fall off the zinc. Is that
I don't know. There's a primer, and I can't be too specialised on this because we don't stock the stuff. It was just there must be a primer that absolutely sticks to the aluminium, and then your paint sticks to the primer, and that's how it works. Because you wouldn't paint straight on, because it would sort of, you'd almost think it would skid straight off again. So it's like anything, any wood or canvas. You have to prime it, and that would be the same as the aluminium.
And would you put gouache on or something like that?
Or anything. Once you've got your primer on, if it's oil primer, you paint on oil. If it's acrylic primer, you paint with acrylic. We do have a primer which is actually a watercolor primer. So if you look at some of the murals around town, especially the Ralph Hotory one And the Ed Sheeran one, that's actually painted with watercolour. So the chap that did it, his name's Tyler Stent, and he gets this watercolour ground, which is kind of like a chalky paint, but it's like it's almost like turning the wall into paper. So you can paint your watercolours on it, and it accepts it, because if you painted watercolours on primer paint or acrylic paint, it would just skid straight off. So if you want to try that, the stuff is called COR, Q-O-R. I'm not quite sure what it stands for. But you can turn any surface into essentially watercolour paper, which is very good if you want to do a huge picture, something that's bigger than paper, then this is the stuff. Yeah, COR primer. And it comes in smooth, cold press, and super rough.
Well, that's something
for these giant new paintings. Yeah,
never heard of that. That's fantastic. Yeah. Look, if you want to get an art expert to guide you through your artwork and where and what and how and why, Art Zone is the place to go. That's all.
Well,
I can
you
can say.
Either talk to me or Rosie is the actual technical.
Is she?
She's a very good painter as well, but she knows the actual technical specifics, the science and the chemistry behind it. She knows a hell of a lot more than I do.
But that's a great combination.
Well, it
is.
It is, because, you know, I run a lot of things past her, because she actually enjoys figuring out what these things are made of.
Right.
So, yeah, very useful. Very useful.
Now, there you are. There's something for everybody to make the best use of. Also, of course, we've got the art, the Otago Art Society. And I think the Edinburgh's just finished, if I'm not mistaken. Am I in the right part of the world? Or
no, we've got it's got quite a bit to go. It will be I think they're receiving their paintings tomorrow, Sunday.
Right.
And then they'll sit on them for a week and hang them up. And then the Edinburgh show is about a week after that. And I think the Edinburgh goes for a month, so... yes, God help you, it hasn't finished.
It hasn't quite started. We'd better add a week to that, though, because we're pre-recording. And so there's a week between which is going to happen.
So just to clarify the dates, if you just look at the Otago Art Society website.
What a good idea.
But that's the big one. They have the Hopes one, which is the super big one, and the Edinburgh. They're the two... the two real big ones of the year. So, yes, looking forward to that.
Yes, I'll say it's great to see that the Art Society is thriving. And I think it's not in no small way because of the leadership that they've had lately. It's a tremendous commitment to be the chair of the Otago Art Society. And those people have stood up and taken it on, have really delivered in the last couple of terms.
And because it used to, you know, like 10 years ago, it was kind of a hobby gallery that was more often closed than open. They only opened it if they could get someone to man it and if there was a show on. And if there wasn't, if there was a break between shows, they might close the thing up for a month.
Yeah. No.
And now it's a seven-day-a-week thriving business.
Absolutely.
And there are some paid people there, but there's also a lot of volunteers. They couldn't do it. It's like a lot of organizations. Mm. They couldn't do it if they didn't have the volunteers.
Yeah, that's right. And the wonderful thing about the shop there, you know, if you're going along, it's a great place to go to because they're all originals. You know, you buy something there that is a one-off. Not like you may if you go to a store in the town. You know, there are dozens of whatever it is you choose for a gift, and it's a very special gift indeed. If you go to the Art Society, you can get jewellery and you can get paintings and prints.
And sculpture. They do some very nice little sculptures there as well. Yeah. Yes, and like you say, they're all one-off and they're all local. Mm. Everyone's local.
Yeah, that's right. Dunedin Public Art Gallery is going on. Most of these places are remaining open, which is a good thing. However, it must be very difficult for them to mount exhibitions with the current difficulties in transportation and also even staffing levels.
Yeah.
However, the lovely thing about the Dunedin Public Art Gallery is you can go along there And in fact, I think it's a quiet time. You tend to go in there and you can just look at work. You don't want to be interrupted. You just want to have a little reverie. It's almost like going to a cathedral or something like that. And you can look at the artworks without any obligation to make comment rather than to be with your own thoughts.
And they've got an exhibition at the moment. It's the standard paintings they've got. They've got some crazy modern ones, and then next door they've got the regular ones, which I just love those. You know, there's Monets and Turners and, you know, the finest art in the world, which is it's so weird looking at. I mean, they've had a Monet there for years. And you're standing there looking and you think, this is in Dunedin. We don't have to go to Paris for this.
That's got, right.
What is that painting? It's one I've always looked at. It's a still life of lots of different things with every texture. So you've got glass, frosted glass, some metal, gold, fabric, lace, velvet. Do you know that painting?
No, I don't.
I've looked at it since I was a kid. And there's even a little glass bust. And the body is shiny, you know, like clear glass,
yeah.
And the face is frosted glass. But every texture is represented in this painting, and you can see exactly what it is. You don't have to look, you know, is it leather or is it wood? It's whoever's done it has depicted every possible texture. It's a very, very busy still life, but it's absolutely fantastic.
Well, there's your job for the day.
Yeah.
Or the week.
Find out.
Go and find out what that is.
Yeah.
And I think I'll have to do the same as well. Right, well, we've sort of covered off the local art scene. I think we should have a little bit of music. We're going to greet you with, I think, oh yes, this is a band I've always enjoyed. They're called The Flaming Lips. And Wayne Coyne is one of the members of The Flaming Lips. And guess what? Well, yes, he's an artist. So let's have a listen to Wayne Coyne together with The Flaming Lips. With the song Going On.
We hope. Do we're going on.
Well, he's still going on, but he's stopped now, and that's Wayne Coyne of the Flaming Lips. If you haven't heard of it, do try it. Do try it. Very, very nice music. I'm shamelessly advertising the Flaming Lips as something that's worth a listen to. They're full of very interesting original musical thoughts, which they convey through the air these days. Imagine how it must have been to be a musician way back in the sort of the 1880s when
pre-radio.
Yeah, you couldn't. You couldn't let anyone hear your work unless you drew them all together in a concert.
And you think how quiet the world would have been. That, like, the only music you would have had is live music. So there's no TV, no radio, probably no records. The only way you could hear music is if it was live. And it's not that long ago, really.
No, it is not. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Aren't we lucky, folks? And you out there in radio land, you don't know how lucky you are. Now, I'm going to really step forward in time. There was a wonderful, during the perhaps the 60s, the Americans were absolutely burgeoning with new art. People like Andy Warhol and many others were producing interesting new work, breaking away from the old ideas of perhaps you could say boring landscapes, and I just said it, and I'm sorry I did, because
because you know I'm a landscape artist. You can say it.
That's right.
I don't take offence.
Roy Lichtenstein, well, I'll give you a bit of an idea from some of his quotes. Andy's going to tell us about him, and he knows the type of work it was, because it was like cartoons, really, in a way. And he introduced things like Batman, and he'd have bang and whoom and whoosh and stuff like that in them. And he was obviously a free thinker. One quote of his is, "I don't have a big anxieties. I wish I did. I'd be much more interesting." And talking about his art, he says, "Art doesn't transform. It just plain forms." Another quote, which I think is quite an insight into the man's ideas. "I like to pretend that my art has nothing to do with me."
Weird.
Yeah, that's what you said in the 60s, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've got some more here. "Picasso's always been such a huge influence that I thought when I started the cartoon paintings that I was getting away from Picasso. And even my cartoons of Picasso were done almost to rid myself of his influence." So you could see they were searching for new directions. Obviously Picasso did loom large in his legend. He said, "I don't think there's any question that Picasso was the greatest figure of the 20th century." So he made up for his trying to get rid of him. Also, it was pop art. Which popped up, so to speak. And he says, "I wasn't sure pop art or my work would last more than 6 months." And I think a lot of us felt that way back there in the 60s. He obviously loved what he's doing, because he regarded it almost like music. And that he was trying to make his paintings, as he said, like giant musical chords with a polyphony of colours that is nuts. But it works. Good on you, Roy. He certainly was a breath of fresh air. And let's hear a bit more about the man himself.
So, yes, Roy Lichtenstein. He was one of the most influential and innovative artists of the second half of the 20th century. He is preeminently identified with pop art, a movement he helped originate. And his first fully achieved paintings were based on imagery from comic strips and advertising, and rendered in a style mimicking the crude printing process of the newspaper reproduction. And that's what we were talking about before with the big dots making up. You said like a blown up newspaper. Yeah. And that's exactly what he did. These paintings reinvigorated the American art scene and altered the history of modern art. Lichtenstein's success was matched by his focus and energy. And after his initial triumph in the early 1960s, he went on to create an I can't read that word. Oeuvre. You're a Frenchy.
Oeuvre.
Oeuvre.
Yeah, which is sort of masterpieces of all their work.
Oh, your really?
Oeuvre is those that all your paintings put together is your oeuvre.
Oh, really? Get over
I'm
it.
I'm sorry, I was sorry. The oeuvre.
The oeuvre.
What I think it comes from.
It's got to be
the French for egg. Earth is, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The French for egg. So, well, I'll read it in English. He went on to create an egg of more than 5,000 paintings, prints, drawings, sculptures, murals, and other objects celebrated for their wit and invention. Roy Fox Lichtenstein was born in 1923 in New York City. And he was the first of two children of Milton and Beatrice Werner Lichtenstein. Milton was a successful real estate broker, and Beatrice, a homemaker, had trained as a pianist. And she exposed Roy and his sister, Renee, to museums, concerts, and other aspects of New York culture. Roy showed artistic and musical ability very early on, and he drew and painted and sculpted as a teenager and spent many hours in the American Museum of Natural History and the Museum of Modern Art. He played piano and clarinet and developed an enduring love of jazz, frequenting the night spots in Midtown to hear it. He attended the Franklin School for Boys, which was a private junior high and high school, graduated in 1940. The summer he studied painting and drawing from the model at the Art Students League in New York with Reginald Marsh. In September, he entered the Ohio State University in Columbus in the College of Education. His early artistic idols were Rembrandt, Picasso, and often said that Guernica, a painting from 1937, then on long-term loan of the Museum of Art, was his favorite painting, even
amazing.
As an undergraduate, which is strange because that was slightly cartoon-like. I mean, it's a very harsh painting.
It certainly is.
But it's very, it's like the cartoons of today, like very sharp edges. It probably wasn't like that then, but there was a slight cartoon
It was a railing against the Spanish War of Independence, wasn't it, Guernica? And the artist was standing in front of that painting. Imagine contemplating your own painting in a gallery, and up came a Spanish military officer and came and stood beside him, and he turned to what's the artist's name? I forgot.
It was Picasso, surely.
Yeah. And he said, who did that? And he said, you did.
Oh. It's funny because all through, we studied that at high school, and I was told by my art teacher that that painting depicted the concentration camps in Nazi Germany.
Oh.
Which, obviously, it wasn't.
So that's right.
When you're teaching this stuff, you've got to get your facts right because it's quite important.
It's pretty important. But then again, it's easy to get confused. I mean, how many times has Russia, had a go at Ukraine? I mean, this isn't the first time.
No.
And they just keep on doing it. So, you know.
And there'll be just on that note, you think of how much new art will be around depicting what's happening.
Oh, absolutely.
They're making art at the moment. There was actually there was an old woman who was photographed like coming out of her house, and she's become the face of the war in Ukraine, and she didn't even know it. There's all sorts of art screen prints and whatever. She is the look, and you know, she's one of the most famous people in the world at the moment.
No, I don't think she's very happy.
She wasn't happy at all about it. She get that out there
because she's not. I don't think she's sure whether she's a Ukrainian or a Russian.
Well,
so,
I mean, you're not going to be taking anyone to court over this sort of thing. But you would, you know, if you're associated with something, you want it to. You at least want to say yes.
Yes, absolutely.
So, just winding up, Lichtenstein. He obviously had a massive career. He created three major series in the 1990s, which was emblematic of his ongoing interest in solving pictorial problems. The interiors, mural-sized canvases inspired by a minuscule advertisement in an Italian phone book, delve again into the perpetual ambiguities of reflections from windows and mirrors. The nudes reprise the theme of women in a romance comic mode, which Lichtenstein had introduced in the 1960s and was amplified in lush, surrealist-inspired beach scenes from the 1970s. Mm. As with the interiors, there is ample quotation of elements from earlier canvases. The furniture of Lichtenstein's painted world. So well, he had a lot of influences and a lot of styles, and it's just quite interesting that he's done this thing. Remember the old TV sets? When you were a kid, did you ever get up to the TV set and try to look at it? Full of dots. Everything was made of a dot.
That's right.
That's what his paintings are like, which are very realistic when you stand back, when you get up close.
Yes.
You don't know what you're looking at.
I had a friend at university who blew up. I think Andy Warhol did the one of Marilyn Monroe, and if you look at that, that's made up of dots. And that friend of mine so admired Andy Warhol that he wanted to emulate him, and so he got a newspaper picture of Marilyn Monroe and blew it up. And sure enough, once it was really big, it was just dots.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's quite amazing what you can see. I think probably it would be quite an exercise to actually try to do that because it's a little bit like, you know, you often look at a painting from a distance and you've got a very clear idea of what it is. And then you go up close and you can hardly
distinguish. You can hardly see it. What was the name of that guy? It's a chap in a wheelchair, and his paintings move around massive things. And he's got this mechanical thing, so he obviously can't move. So he makes the painting go left, right, up and down. So he paints squares about the size of a cigarette packet with squiggles in them. And when you go back, they're photographic pictures. But you look at all these squares, you know, like, say, the size of a cigarette packet, with little dots and crosses and swirly things. It's nothing. And he must have the vision to say, when I step back, I'm going to see these portraits. Have you ever heard of that guy?
Yes, I have.
It's just amazing. He works on two stories. So his painting can drop beneath the floor.
Oh, amazing.
So he can paint on the top. It can go up through the floor, so he can paint on the bottom. They're massive. They're a massive size of a wall. And they can go left and right. So it's all mechanical. And he doesn't move. It moves around him.
Wow.
And I don't know what they do with these paintings when they're done, because you've actually got to get them out of a building and into the building that they're going to live, because they're huge.
I want to buy that, but I'll have to hold off until I've bought a house that's big enough to take it.
Yeah, I'll have the door taken out.
Yeah, and I'm equally fascinated by people who do miniatures. And just recently they've had there's a program on the TV where they have a competition to make absolutely miniature furniture. They decorate a room that's only about 8 inches square.
Oh, that's just started up, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think we're taping it because we're really interested in the tiny little
details. It is marvellous.
Crazy.
And they actually make these things, one-offs, you know, vase of flowers or whatever else. And one of the judges, his name is Wigan, and he is absolutely famous for his tiny, tiny miniature works that are just astonishing. And probably one of the most famous ones is a figure, it's in the eye of a needle. That's an example. Check it out, Wigan. I can't remember his first name.
He did. He did a thing. He made a real working ball and chain from a matchstick. So the ball was the head of the match, and he'd carved the wood to make a chain, and it rattled like it wasn't.
Without breaking it.
And like a chain, you can move a chain around, and this was from one piece of wood. You just think, how do you? What are your tools like? How would you do it? It's crazy.
Just astonishing. Of course, there'd be someone who would walk up and say, well, that match head looks live.
Give it a strike. What a pain, though. Imagine if you hired a gallery to show all your work. You think how much work you'd have to produce to fill the gallery.
That's true. Bring microscopes.
Yeah.
Well, okay, bit of music. And I think because Roy Lichtenstein, he put words into his music. And so we're going to play a song you might remember, If a Picture Tells a Thousand Words.
If a picture paints a thousand words, then why can't I paint you? The words will never show the you I've come to know. If a face could launch a thousand ships, then where am I to go? There's no one home but you. You're all that's left me too. And when my love for life is running dry, you come and pour yourself on me. If a man could be two places at one time, I'd be with you tomorrow and today, beside you all the way. If the world should stop with all things spinning slowly down to die, I'd spend the end with you. And when the world was through, then one by one the stars would all go out. Then you and I would see.
Well, I really love that song. And Bread, goodness knows, where did they go? I guess they went stale.
Oh! Well, they could have gone upper crust.
That's right. Talking of bread, these days you want to go to, I know I digress, but you go to the bread shop and you say, I'd like a white loaf, please. Oh, no, we don't have any of that. And then you've got a list of all sorts of incredible kind of mixtures of dough, like fruit and.
I know, and you start panicking. You think, I just want a loaf of bread. It's like ordering a coffee. You don't go into a cafe. They give us a coffee. You've got these list of unpronounceable options.
Well, you want to try your own patience. Yeah. Order an egg in America. You want to eat over easy?
Oh, sunny side up. Yeah. Just an egg.
Just an egg, thanks. Oh, no, we don't do that. Yeah.
Yeah, we do oeuvre. What was the?
Oeuvre.
Oeuvre.
Well, if.
It's like someone's punched you in the chest when you're ordering your breakfast.
Absolutely. Now, I wanted to, rather looking at a lot of quotes, I thought was interesting. And Van Gogh, which I think, did he come up earlier on or not?
He was, you did have some Van Gogh quotes.
Yeah. And, you know, his name keeps coming up. He's considered the greatest Dutch painter after Rembrandt, and he was a post-impressionist artist, and his work was highly influenced 20th century art. So it's germane, really, that you can think that from time to time someone turns up and almost changes the face of art. And I think probably Andy Warhol, you know, whether you like him or not, he had a huge influence on people such as Roy Lichtenstein that we've just been talking about. Van Gogh, you know, it was on the other side of the coin. Lived a short and tumultuous life, struggling with mental illness during, in fact, as everyone knows, that he had a seizure and he cut off his left earlobe after a fiery argument with Paul Gauguin, who was one of his fellow artists. They lived together, the two of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and God knows.
There's so many myths about this missing ear. I've heard 100 stories of how he did it. Was it a fight? Did he do it himself?
No, they say he did it himself.
Right.
But you see, even now, there's still speculation as to whether he committed suicide or he was shot by some kid. That speculation has come to a head lately with some forensic work. They found the gun.
Oh.
Yeah. And they have, they're now of the opinion, because he had the gun, it was his gun. And, they are now of the opinion he really did actually take his own life. Yeah.
Why would they give him a gun?
Well, I don't think they gave it to him. I think he would find it himself.
Just had it. Oh, I just thought if someone is, you know, a bit edgy like that, you're not going to give them access to firearms.
Well, he wasn't always incarcerated.
No.
So, when he was with Gauguin, they lived in the Yellow House, which you'll have seen the painting of. Of the Yellow House. In fact, because he was so troubled, he actually, we understand, he offered it to a woman named Rachel at a local brothel. He was a regular customer at the brothels. And he said, "Here, would you like my ear?
Is your ear?
Lend me your ear." Friends, Romans, customers.
Yeah, yeah. No, I won't lend it. You can have it.
It's just been hanging about. Yeah. He actually, troubled women were something that he always felt an attraction for. He thought he could help, and this turned his love life into a total fiasco. And the love he felt for others made him, almost gave away his worldly goods. He gave away a lot of paintings. They did say he never sold a painting. He did sell one to Theo, but it's not altogether right because his... Theo's wife sold a lot of his paintings. Yeah. So
imagine if you were lucky enough to be given a painting and you hang on to it and you hand it down.
Yes.
It'd be around today. Yeah. You don't throw paintings at someone.
No way. Especially not Van Gogh's.
No.
Yeah, Van Gogh, you're off. Anyway, folks, we're going to have a little bit of music now and we'll be back for another fascinating piece of artistic. Well, we may not be. We might just go home. Oh, no, we couldn't do that to our wonderful listeners. All right, then. We shall be finishing up in the fullness of time. And I'd like to thank you for listening to us. And think on about Van Gogh and Lichtenstein. Well worth... completely different artists and well worth having a look at. Okay, some music. Thank you.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.